Hey guys, this is the Vertical Guidance Podcast.
I'm Wyatt Fink.
And I'm Alex Danger.
And we're interviewing pilots from around the industry about their flight training experiences. And our goal is to make getting into the aviation industry easier by offering advice to people that are right on the edge of beginning their aviation journey.
So let's get into it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. This week on the podcast, we have Owen Poborski and Trent Cardo, and we're going to be talking about state check preparation and state checks overall. Welcome on, boys.
How's it going?
Going pretty well. Well, I like to start the podcast out by getting to know what got you in aviation, what credentials you have right now. So, Owen, you want to go a little bit on your kind of background in aviation?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Glad to be here. So I am currently a standards check pilot at UND. I have a CFI, CFII certificate, and then I start ATP, CTP in December at my regional airline. I guess I've always kind of wanted to be a pilot. I didn't have anyone that flew in my immediate family, but my uncle was in the Air Force and now flies at FedEx. So kind of by proxy, I got involved in aviation through him and found UND and thought it was the best fit and kind of gave me the best options and resources going forward for a career in the field. So here we are living the dream.
How about you, Mr. Trent?
Yeah, same as Owen. I'm also a UND standards check pilot. My class date's a little bit farther out for SkyWest right now, in April. But basically what got me into aviation, don't really have a pinpoint on that, but high school, I was kind of looking at different careers. You know, you have the classes where you're supposed to do some research on what you want to do with your life, and kind of just started researching different careers, and it looked like pilots could make pretty good money. And also I thought about maybe being a pilot, like as a hobby someday, being a dentist maybe. And I realized like, hey, why not just go to school for it and do it all the time? So that's really how I ended up in aviation. My mom's also a flight attendant for American. So growing up with flight benefits, pretty good situation there to just be able to travel all the time when you want. So kind of wanted to keep that going. I never flew a plane before I went to UND, so it was kind of just a send coming up here, and it worked out, as you can see, so far.
So, Trent, at like what point did you know that, you know, flying was going to be what you wanted to do for the rest of your life, especially since you didn't know you've never flown a plane when you came up here?
Yeah, a lot of people do their, like, observation flights and training, and then like I just didn't do any of that. I just came up here. I basically toured campus and thought like, hey, this place looks pretty neat, really great facilities and aircraft. I toured a couple other colleges, really two other colleges, but they weren't aviation schools. And then when I toured UND, I kind of, they just really marketed me, and that's where I ended up. I think it's a great career. I'd like to do it for a long time, but I kind of wish I had some sort of backup plan as well, in case we're all as pilots, we're always concerned about losing our medicals and whatnot. So currently I'm just gonna kind of go with the flow of things and continue to be an airline pilot. I guess it never really hit me like, hey, this is what I want to do. It's more of, well, I made it this far and it's pretty fun, so I guess we'll keep doing it. I still got my doors open for other opportunities with careers. So
all right, sweet. Well, thank you very much for that well thought out answer. We really appreciate that.
You guys missed questions earlier.
All right, so let's just dive right into it. So check ride, stage checks, you guys get those, you do those day in and day out with all sorts of different students. So what do you guys think would be the best way to prepare for an oral portion of this stage check?
So on Blackboard, there's usually a study guide for all the stage checks. And a lot of people don't know that. I know Trent went like a streak of like 6-8 checks where they just didn't even know that the study guide existed.
Yeah, and the debrief, I'd just pull that up and they'd be amazed. They're like, whoa. Most of the answers are kind of right here on what I need to study. So,
and a lot of the checks that we do are straight out of the ACS, Airman Certification Standards, or PTS. And that's just like not just a book that you want to just buy and throw on your bookshelf. That's what we evaluate. That's where our questions come from and how we kind of make our stage check.
If you follow that, there really shouldn't be any surprises on an oral. I guess maybe a question could get worded weird, but I always give the students an opportunity to like explain like, hey, I don't know what you mean by that. And then I'll try to break it down or maybe cover some other portions of that same topic.
Yeah. If the check pilot says, are you sure about your answer? You're probably not right.
So
that's a good tip right there.
With those like answers, I know sometimes when I'm in a stage, you can have like those kind of questions where you're 50-50 on it. Is it better to guess that 50-50 or to say, I don't know?
I always kind of prefer just like for you guys, for like students to be honest and open. Because if you pick the wrong one, well, then now we're going to start talking about that. And then you might kind of second guess yourself. And yeah. So my suggestion would be to be like, well, I'm torn between maybe these two options. And then, you know, my kind of thought process from there would be like, okay, well, why do you think it's one or the other? And have you get to the right answer on your own. Versus just saying, nope, that's wrong. You're done. Go home.
So how come stage check pilots keep on digging when you say something wrong?
We're just trying to find like the depth of knowledge. So there's no questions in any of my plan of actions and any stage check I've ever done. There's not one question that if you get it wrong, like unset. It's kind of like, I'll ask you one. If you get it wrong, we might cover it. Like they might not know if they get it wrong. They'll just say an answer and then I'll ask them another similar question or maybe dig deeper in that topic. Cause it's usually just one thing that they didn't know. Maybe they knew like the rest of the area that we're discussing. So I'm kind of just digging. It's kind of for the benefit of them. Cause if I just ask like one question, they got it wrong. I kind of still need to evaluate that topic and make sure that they understand the task at hand.
And I think it's important too to consider the definition of what unsat is, right? Or unsatisfactory. It's a gross exceedance of standards, right? So take like a steep turn, for example, you know, if your standards are plus or minus 100 feet and you get 110 feet high, realize it and correct for it, that's sat. You made a mistake and you corrected for it. The unsat would come as if you got like 200 feet high and just didn't correct. And I think that's a big misconception on checks that like one wrong answer and you're done, you're going home.
So what are you going to say, Trent?
With preparing for the oral specifically, like you asked, I think the best idea is use lots of resources. There's resources people have created online, like Quizlets. You just got to kind of verify that information is like correct. There's lots of great books out there on like Private Pilot Check Ride. It pretty much has every question. Some of those are way too detailed. But if you know that information, you're good to go. When preparing specifically for like Private Pilot Check Ride or something, just study as much as you can. And then personally, like the night before, I'm just like, okay, I either know it or I don't, here we go. And that kind of takes the pressure off of me a little bit. You know, I tell myself like, well, I've studied hard. I've prepared well for what I think, and then just kind of go with it and hopefully it works out, and it usually does.
Okay.
Does that mentally like calm you down before a stage? It's just thinking like that?
Yeah. For me personally, I study a lot beforehand. And then once I reach a point, I'm just like, okay, that's enough studying. If I unsat, I don't deserve to be a private pilot or whatever. So.
And from the student standpoint too, like you put all this hard work and effort into your flying all semester, like you learn so much, especially like 102 private pilot, so much knowledge, like it's a lot to retain. Like you can't do it the night before. So I think that's a great, great trick.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely need to start studying like at least 2 weeks in advance. But going back to your guys, the first thing that Owen said, how Trent had all of those checks with, there was, no one knew that the Blackboard study guides were like a thing. So do you guys find that a lot of times students that are not successful on a stage check, is that due to the instructor like not telling the student about the Blackboard thing, or is it due to the lack of preparation on the student side?
A little bit of both. Like, so if you have an instructor that doesn't prepare them well, like they're not supposed to spoon feed the students all the information. As a student, you should want to learn the information. like, if you don't have that drive to continue to learn more about a topic, then that's kind of on you. Obviously, like the simple study guides, like on Blackboard, they're very useful. However, there's lots of other great information on study guides. Lots of other flight schools have just published information about private pilot check ride, commercial instruments. There's so much information out there. If, like, as a student, if you just don't do the research on what you should be studying, then that's kind of on you as well.
And I, for all of my like 102s for private pilot students, it was homework. So like when we would meet before the check ride, the study guide was filled out and completed to prepare to study, to help kind of guide their studying. For instrument commercial, it's like you're an adult, you need to study on your own. But it's, private pilot is brand new. They're new to college, new to flight training. It's a lot to digest.
So for first time, like state check or kids going into a stage, I know when I came into my first stage, I had no clue what to expect. Owen, how did you mentally prepare for your stages and kind of like show what people should expect from a stage, you know?
So I think like, as far as oral go, it's kind of a lot of like what you make of it, because you have the study guide and you know kind of what they're going to be quizzing you and testing you on, or whether it's the ACS or not. So you need to become the expert in that material, however you do best, however you study. It's different for everybody. I know some students go on campus and they write everything down on whiteboards 1,000 times, or, you know, they make flashcards, or they write everything out, or they just read, you know, their textbooks. It really depends for each individual student. For me personally, I had, you know, late nights in Ryan Hall, and it was kind of a culmination of all those things kind of put together. And it got easier for like the instructor check rides, because you practiced all your lesson plans and your teaching to your instructor. And that kind of made things go a little easier.
So I wanted to go kind of more into getting up to stage, how to be professional getting into it. So first is contacting your stage check pilot. Should I like text them, be like, yo, what's up? I want to do the stage soon, or how am I supposed to do it?
I had that happen to me today, actually.
Did you actually?
So and like it's usually like the earlier stage checks are like, they're not sure how that whole process works. And that's mainly like your instructor didn't explain to them the whole process. And their first stage check, I'm like leaning in, I'll kind of explain them like, hey, we're pilots. We want to be professional about things. We should dress up a little bit. I just try to explain like,
and this is all in a document too on
Blackboard. Yeah, at the end of all my emails, I always put use the, what is that document?
Stage check etiquette.
Stage check etiquette guide posted on Blackboard. And it's pretty evident when they don't read my email, because they'll come wearing sweatpants and shorts or something, because that document definitely like specifically says like show up like 10 minutes early, contact your stage pilot by like email or phone call the first time.
Between 8 a.m. and like 6 p.m. I think it says, or something like that. I got an email at like 10 p.m. on a Sunday.
I don't really care what time they email me. I'm just going to only reply to them at like reasonable hours for the most part. Yeah. If for whatever reason I'm like trying to schedule stuff and do stuff online late at night, I'll like respond to them, but I'll mainly just stick to replying during like normal business hours, because we're real people too, you know. Some of some stage check applicants think that all we do is stage checks all the time, and we're like their only person that's assigned to us. Obviously that's not the case, and as you start going through, you realize like, oh, flight instructors, pretty busy people. So I think it's kind of a learning process in itself on doing your first stage check.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So just to simplify, like an email would be ideal with what stage check they got assigned you for and like their availability, right?
Yep. For all the UND students listening, I prefer an email responded to the AIMS email specifically. I'll try to just send an email off of that replying. That way I don't have 15 different email threads in my inbox, because that can get very confusing.
So what's like the tier down? So let's say you email them and they don't reply for a couple of days. What's like the next way to contact them?
So I guess typically they want us to make the initial contact, or like it's not on the student technically, but it's recommended. So if we don't hear from you, we'll shoot you an email, say, hey, my name's Owen. I was just assigned to be your 415 stage check pilot, or whatever the case may be. What's your availability for the rest of the week, or for the next 7 days, or whatever the case may be? And if we still don't hear anything, you're just going to get booted off the list, and your instructor will have to add you back to the wait list. So, because you're taking up a slot on our schedule that we could fly with someone else who's ready to take their check.
Okay. And then I wanted to go a little more into the professionalism on dressing, because we know how Sam showed up to his first stage in that Bush t-shirt, so that's probably not ideal. But how do you show up professionally for a stage?
I'm usually a little bit more lenient depending on the weather. So if it's summer and it's 100 degrees out, you know, khakis and a polo is, I think, perfectly acceptable. I always wore a shirt and tie to mine just because I wanted to give like that appearance. Not that I think they're going to onset me if I wore a Bud Light shirt, but the stigma associated with it, or they're just kind of first impressions when you walk into their office, are like, are you here for a check ride? Or like, do you have a question? Or like, what are you doing?
One of my,
shouldn't tie.
Yeah. One of my aviation law professors, he said something that stuck with me forever. He's like, pilots, they're the highest level of professionalism. He said that doctors, they bury their mistakes one at a time. Lawyers, they lock their mistakes behind bars one at a time. And pilots, they go down with their mistakes along with lots of other people. So that stuck with me. We need to be very professional. There's kind of a decline in the industry right now of pilots, because there's such a need for pilots. That need for pilots has gotten a lot of younger pilots. And I think the professionalism aspect of being a commercial pilot has kind of declined a little bit. So I think starting out early, trying to act as a professional pilot is good for the industry and just good for yourself. You know, it's a small community, the aviation industry, very small community. So there's a good chance I'll see a lot of the people that I do their stage checks. There's a good chance I'll see them again later in life at the airlines. So
I think dress for the job that you want to. You know, like if you're a pilot, if you're going to be on a pilot, you're going to wear a shirt and tie the rest of your life. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you want to like dress for success, right? I mean, you want to look good, feel good, and then you're going to perform good.
Yeah. Don't wear a three-piece suit when it's 100 degrees out though.
That's true. Definitely agree with that. That image of professionalism you just gave, Trent, that was dark. That was really dark.
It stuck with me.
Very dark.
I like that analogy. It stuck with me. It really, I don't know, it made me think highly of my decisions of being a pilot. And like, wow, you know, we're more professional than doctors potentially and lawyers. So I don't know.
Lots of lives sitting behind you.
Yeah.
That's true. So you better dress up good for every stage check, because
not that serious. But like, I'm never going to like unset someone or treat them different during a stage check. Because it's probably just miscommunication that they didn't know they were supposed to wear like nicer clothes or dress for the occasion, I guess.
I mean, like there is like a unwritten rule though. I mean, first impressions are everything. And if you disagree with that statement, then that's whatever your opinion. But I think it's a fact, you know, like reading all sorts of different books, like you definitely like first impressions matter. So when someone walks into your office with flip-flops on, I just feel like that's a really tough look in the eyes of a stage check pilot. And you can't unset them for having flip-flops on. But like, you might treat them differently than someone that walked in a tuxedo.
There was
another
check pilot who had a student show up. He like walked into his office and like, I think it was like cargo shorts and flip-flops. And the stage pilot was like, do you have a question? Like, are you here for a stage check? Like, what do you need? And he's like, oh, like, I'm here for my stage check.
So moral of the story, don't wear flip-flops to a stage check, I guess.
Just dress shoes, dress pants, shirt and tie. Then you're good to go.
Simple. Yeah. And you can go find all of that at Kohl's for like $50, right?
Yep.
Easily. But cool. Now,
right, let's move on.
Now that we're done with the, is there any other like oral tips that you guys would give? Because we're going to move on to the flight after, how to prepare for that.
I guess with the oral, try not to overthink things. Like if I ask a question and they respond and I'm kind of like not sure, like their answer is probably wrong or something, I'll probably kind of hint towards like,
we'll ask what we want to know.
Yeah, we'll ask, like we're only asking what we want to know. There's no trick questions. Like if there's a trick question, I don't believe like the stage checks pilot is conducting that correctly. It should just be you're asking the questions that need to be asked. So as a student going into that, think like, hey, if I don't understand the question, just be very honest. Like, hey, what do you mean by this?
And that's something that's in both of our pre-briefs.
Yeah. Like,
if you don't know the answer, just let me know and I'll try and rephrase it. Plain and simple.
I'm not out to get them.
We want you to pass. Yeah. Signing is more paperwork.
Exactly.
More paperwork. But now we're rolling into the flight side of it. How did you guys prepare for stage check flights? Because those are a little more tricky, because for oral, you can sit around, you can read, you can study as much as you want in your room, but you can't really fly in your room. You can only fly in the airplane, obviously. How did you guys prepare for certain stages for that?
Chair fly?
Did that help quite a bit?
I thought it helped a lot in 102 or private pilot. And then also with like instrument profiles, like when you put the flaps down, at what point on the approach and all that kind of stuff. Because you can go through like the motor motions at home. Super dorky. But it was something my private pilot instructor taught me. And it's like, we'll see how this works. And it worked out pretty well for the most part. But I think it's a very cost-effective way. Because an airplane's, you know, what, $120 an hour, and the instructor's 50. So to have to do review flight after review flight is important if you need it. But if you can study and, you know, take care of all that sort of knowledge and learning at home and then just go and perform in the airplane, you're going to save yourself a lot of money.
How about you, Trent?
I just study that, like, your instructor's endorsed you for it. So obviously if the stage check's not too far out, you should be proficient. However, like if it gets scheduled a ways out, yeah, it's on you. You should probably want to do a review flight. But if I'm endorsed for it, I know that my instructor thinks I'm probably ready for it. I'll just kind of take that time until I do the flight to just review all the maneuvers, kind of all the procedures of everything. And then the flights are kind of different. You know, there's so many things that can go like wrong in a flight. So it's a little more stressful, but I just try to tell myself like, all right, I've been trained appropriately for the stage check. So I should be ready. But like I said, there's so many things, so many different factors, weather that could change the way you fly that stage check. So I try not to, I just figure I've been trained for it. I should be well prepared for the flight. And I just try to go in with that mindset. Well, like, well, it's out of my control. Obviously I'm going to try to do the best that I can. So
Trent, you briefly touched on like all the different factors that are going into a flight. So like if a student isn't comfortable with the weather that day for a flight, like how would they go about like weathering that flight, like saying they don't feel comfortable?
Yeah, they could simply just send me an email like, hey, that's out of my personal limitations. Especially for like a private pilot stage check. I'm never going to question that or anything. Let's say you're doing your commercial stage check and the winds are like 10, maybe 15 knots, like right down the runway. And they're like, hey, it's out of my personal limitations. I'll probably be like, so if you want your commercial license, are you going to tell your boss, hey, it's slightly too windy. I don't think I can fly today. So you should be able at the commercial level to fly the aircraft like closer to its limits. Obviously you still have those personal limitations, but if it's definitely like not reasonable, then I might question that a little bit. But in the end, it is up to the student on whether or not to weather it. So
okay, so like how, if they know it's going to be, if they're feeling like it's going to be on the edge and they want to cancel it, like how far ahead of the launch time would you recommend that they go about doing that?
As soon as they make their decision.
Yeah, like, as soon as they know
as early as possible. Because if I have a launch for like a private pilot and it's gusting like 22 or 25 or whatever and they don't want to go, that's fine. but then I'll go fly with like a 415 student or, you know, someone else that could use that launch. It's just efficiency.
Okay, cool. So like as soon as they know, that's good to know. Yeah. So
sometimes at 6:30 in the morning, you wake up and fly far out. It's like, okay, we're not going. Go back to bed.
Okay, so if you feel as a stage pilot, if you feel like they did good 90% of the time, I'm talking about the student in this case. So if they did good 90% of the time, but 10% of the time was like pretty marginal, would you still pass the student?
Were they within standards?
90% of the time they were within standards.
Did they make prompt corrections?
Was it a gross exceedance? So it really depends. Like back to the steep turn scenario, if you get 110 feet off, yeah, that's outside standards, but you correct it. So that's fine.
It depends where that 10% of not being within standards is. If it's something like very important, like
traffic pattern entry,
and it becomes like a traffic conflict issue. So stage checks are kind of weighted. You know, you have all these different tasks. Some are like, they're all important to be within standards, but let's say you do something like you turn the wrong way when ATC told you to turn north, you turn east or something, or they tell you to like not end. Like, there's so many things that go into flying, and some are like very important for safety reasons. If it's a safety reason, that's very cut and dry.
Or an aircraft limitation, like a flap over speed.
Yeah, it's a very cut and dry unsat scenario. But something like slow flight, if they bounce out of standards slightly and correct for it, and the 10% of the time for your scenario that they're out of standards, I guess, would be like, as long as it's not safety related or anything and they're just slightly bouncing out and correcting for it, that would be fine.
So I kind of wanted to go into depth on kind of your guys' thought process through a stage check. What are you guys thinking when you're in the right seat with like a 102 or 323 or really anyone on a stage? Are you like constantly wired in on their like altitude, airspeed to make sure everything's fine? Are you kind of like more laid back and it's more like safety of flight that you're worried about?
I think it's a good mix of both. I mean, at the end of the day, you're the PIC, you're responsible for the safety of the flight and whatnot. But if you're in the practice area, I mean, and you're doing like VFR maneuvers or something like that on either of those checks, it's pretty easy to just know when you're outside of standards, just based on the feel of the aircraft, because you've done it so much. And you can look over and go, yep, we're definitely too low. Let's fix that. All right, let's try it again, you know, or something like that. Versus just having like my eyes fixed on their instruments. That's just going to make them nervous. So I usually just sit there. And if I'm looking out the window, you're doing great.
So, where do you draw the line on set on sex? I felt like I've had a couple stages where like, I was like, I could have definitely been questionable right there, but they didn't say anything. So I'm going to continue. Like, where do you draw the line?
Well, I think Trent, when he said safety, that's a big thing.
Yeah. If it's a big safety issue, you're exceeding aircraft limitations. That's a big unset. It's really nice when people just do everything well within standards. That makes our job nice and easy. So I appreciate that. But our job becomes difficult when you're floating in and out of standards. Like, you're not grossly exceeding, but you're kind of right on the edge. That makes it really hard. And unfortunately, it does end up often where I've seen that the pilots that are kind of on the edge, there's usually some one contributing factor that like, yep, that was a safety issue there. And that would be the unsatisfactory.
Well, they're just so nervous too. That, yeah. Like, you know, their hands are shaking while they're holding the controls. Or like, I can feel through the rudders, their feet shaking. And it's like, hey, relax. It's a beautiful day. We're out flying. Life's good. You know, just take a deep breath. Pretend I'm not here. I'm your instructor. And just show me your steep turn. And then they nail it, you know? So
I know.
Do you guys do anything to like help ease the nerves of these guys?
I do, because I know there was some stage checks that I had and I was like super nervous for. And now that I'm on the other side of the table, I'm like, why was I so nervous? Like, this is just some random person who's here, you know, to evaluate me. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. So I try to put applicants at ease, you know, at the beginning, like, hey, I was in that seat a year ago, or, you know, whatever the case might be, like, just do your thing.
That was part of why the reason I wanted to be a stage deck pilot, because I had really bad stage deck nerves. Like, I'd sleep terrible before my flights, just knowing that, like, oh gosh, what's going to happen tomorrow? Am I going to pass? Am I not?
And that's the worst thing you can do, is stay up all night the night before worrying.
Yeah, exactly. It probably took me until I got to my commercial stage check. Like, every flight, I'd start the aircraft, start taxiing, my left leg would just start violently shaking. Yeah. I was just so nervous. And at this stage, probably they can always notice that, like, hey, relax, like, you're doing fine. Like, we're not unsat for any reason at this point. You have no reason to be worried at this point. I'm assuming you'll pass that stage check when I go into that as an evaluator. Like, you've completed all the lessons, your instructor has endorsed you. We're doing the stage check right now, therefore you should be ready. So I have no reason to think that we're going to have an unsat that day. So
I think one of the things students should, like, realize is, like, their instructor is not going to put them in on a stage if they're not ready. Like, you're ready for the stage when you're going in. So I think that's very key to understand. But I know you guys were talking about unsats quite a bit, and I kind of wanted to go into that, the ungodly unsat. So if a kid unsats a stage, what is kind of the process after that?
They have to go and review with their instructor. So if it was an oral, they'd have to go meet and do, like, a review briefing and cover the subject that was deficient. Or if it was a flight and they unsat on, like, a landing, well, they'd have to go out and practice the landing. And then you have, like, two choices. You can either email, like, us, your initial stage pilot, like, hey, I'm ready to go, when can we fly? Or if you don't want to do it with that check pilot, which is completely your discretion, your instructor can put you back on the wait list.
Okay. And then do you get, like, unlimited unsats, or how's that all work?
I wish.
How many do you get?
What's the answer, boys? Come on.
The short answer is it depends. You get after two. So if you unsat the same check, or maybe a different task, doesn't have to be the same one, you have to do a review board.
It even depends. Sometimes it'll be a unsat that stage check twice on the same task. You'll quick talk to an assistant chief manager, and they'll talk to the instructor, and they'll be like, okay, yeah, you don't need to do a review board. It really depends on what the unsat was. Like,
it was a small thing.
If it was one thing, like safety related, like, hey, maybe you misheard that radio call and they just started turning the wrong way, or started entering the pattern wrong at an uncontrolled field. Like, if it was just, like, one simple thing, the rest of the stage check went well, there's probably not a review board for that.
Okay. So moving on to, like, a higher level, you've obviously been hired at the airlines now, and you're just kind of waiting for your class dates. But assuming you do have some stage check failures, how did that go during the airline interview? Like, did you have to explain those, or did they kind of just brush it off?
I think Owen probably had less than me, but I was just very honest with them. I explained. So coming from UND, the Part 141 school, we have we have numerous stage checks. A lot of them are just progress checks, making sure you're ready for the final stage checks where you get that certificate or pass your course finally. I was very honest, like, the ones that are certificate granting, and of course our TCO has changed, so we have more certificate granting. You should be prepared for the stage checks, but in the event of an unsat, I always came out of an unsat thinking, like, well, I unsat that, but I'm glad I learned that on the stage check, because if it wasn't caught then, like, maybe I'd be out flying commercially and doing some job, and I'd screw it up then with people on board. So I'm glad I learned there. Or like an instructor check ride. I was just kind of glad that you just kind of explain it to your employer or the people you're doing the interview with. You don't want to hide anything from them, and there's a good chance they've unsat things in their careers as well. So it's very rare a pilot goes through all their training with no unsats, because it's a learning experience. The stage check should be a learning experience as well.
So we all can't be Wyatt, who has no unsats, but I was also.
Hey now.
Hey, so with the stage checks and unsats, do you only need to talk to interviewers about the certificate granting ones?
It depends. Who you're interviewing with. I just ask them. A lot of them only care about the certificate granting ones, or some of them care about like the end of course ones.
Or none of them, because all of them are done in-house at UND. None of them are FAA check rides, and what they care about are, they're called pink slips. So in the Part 61 world, if you go take your private pilot check ride and you fail, you get a sheet of paper that says what you failed, and it's literally a pink piece of paper. And at UND, we don't do that. So the answer is no, you don't have any pink slips, but here's my training history. So it's a lot better on your record as a pilot, how we do it here at UND.
So did the interviewers ask you guys about that? And then did you just kind of explain what you did wrong? Like, oh, I was low on a steep turn and then I unset and I should have done this.
Yeah, that's a very specific scenario that happened to me. 325 commercial multi-engine instrument, the big combo, what we used to have, where you get all those ratings at once.
3-in-1.
A little low on a steep turn, didn't correct for it. Boom, unset. And then actually not a little low, like pretty significantly low. I just did not correct at the time. And that was unset. We got about halfway through, and at that point we were just like, all right, we'll just head back now. And then I just kind of explained that. Yep, a little low on a steep turn. Didn't finish the rest of the check, finished it up on the next one after a new flight. And he was like, oh, cool, no big deal. Like, what the interviewers did not really care.
What they care about is what you learned from it. So in my interview experience, one of the forms that you fill out before even going to the interview is disclose all training failures. And you say, okay, on stat, this check. And in all of my interviews, I said this was progress check 15 of 25 at UND, conducted under UND's examining authority. And what I messed up, my commercial single engine, I unsat on a short field landing because I touched down before my touchdown point, right? Which is outside of standards. So I explain that, and then I explain why, and most importantly, like what I learned from it. That's what they care about. What did you take away from that scenario, like Trent was saying?
Oh, and I'm just wondering, what did you learn from touching down too early on a short field landing?
Don't go to Hillsboro when the winds are out of the west. No, I'm kidding. I was slow on final. I was too slow. So when I rounded out and flared, I just didn't have enough energy to carry me to my touchdown point.
Okay.
So, I think a lot of people don't realize the reason of like short field and power off 180s. We can always just plant it on the runway and that's good. But if you want to be a commercial pilot someday, or maybe you are a private pilot and you have your own aircraft, you're trying to land on maybe your friend has a really short landing strip in his driveway, or you're just trying to go to some cool airports, you should have the knowledge and ability to
pick a point and hit it.
If you're going to be short of the point, that's fine, go around. You're still trying to land on that runway. And like if you're a bush pilot or something, flying landing on like the middle of a riverbed that's slightly dried up and you only have a couple hundred feet to land on, if your aim point is the beginning of that riverbed, like that might not work out. So if your aim point quite literally could be before the runway and you're touching down after. Granted, we're a big training environment, so that is not the case here at all. Like
we land 1,000 feet down the runway on a 7,000-foot runway and practice soft field takeoffs and landings on concrete.
But once you're a private pilot and you have that ability, the technique to land on that touchdown point, you should be able to be good enough at that to be able to practice that on your own to increase your own ability. Like, for example, maybe you get your private pilot's license, you end up like not continuing, or maybe that's all you wanted to do. It's kind of beneficial that you have the knowledge and skill to be able to increase your proficiency to the point where you'd feel safe landing on those shorter runways.
So you said, talked about go rounds. When do you unsat someone for doing too many go rounds? Is that a thing? Like, let's say someone's doing a power off 180. Cause I remember I did quite a few go rounds on my 323. So did I didn't know, like, I didn't know where, like, cause I think I did two or three. And I was like, I think if I do a go around again, I'm screwed.
I think it depends on why you're going around. So if you're doing the shorter for the power off 180, right? And every time you're going to land 1,000 feet long, and you go around and every time you roll final four whites, 80 knots, and you're going to be long, well, then you're not learning any, right? You're not learning from your mistakes. You're not extending your downwind or adding flaps or slip or whatever. That's unsaid after a couple go arounds. But if you're learning something and maybe it's a weird kind of gusty wind day, I'm fine with three or four go arounds. If you're showing that you're like, you're learning from each go around, like, hey, I was way too short on that one, I'm going to turn sooner, or I'm going to not go flaps full, or whatever the case may be.
For example, I was doing a stage check where we were doing a power off 180, and the winds were like maybe 10 knots at the surface, but for whatever reason, the winds aloft were like 42 knots in the pattern. And that was pretty strong winds.
Did you even make it to the runway?
We did. Maybe it was like around 30, and it wasn't the commercial stage check. It was a prog check. And I assumed that they probably hadn't done power off 180s with a like 30, 32, 35 knot headwind. So when you're in the downwind, you pull that power, like if you don't turn immediately, you're not going to make the runway. So she did, and she kept correcting here and there. We did, I think, 2-3 go arounds maybe. And I was like, we kept getting closer to our aim point, touchdown point. They always made the good call of going around because we were going to land slightly short of our touchdown point. So I was just like, hey, so this time we're keep correcting. I think it'd be a good idea. Maybe we just pull the power immediately. And then we did, and it worked out perfectly. So sometimes it just takes a little bit of, like, stage checks are learning experiences, you know. They had the knowledge to turn a little earlier each time. It was probably just a little abnormal for them to turn immediately when you pull that power. So,
yeah. So speaking of go arounds, you guys would definitely rather see someone go around than try to like slam it down on the runway to make a point, right?
Absolutely. Go around. If we're coming in and we're not stable and they don't call a go around, I'm just like, I'm bracing for impact at that point, ready to take, like, that's our job, you know, we're ready for that. But absolutely go around. Like, if you're not comfortable with landing, don't land.
If you think you're going to land on the grass or the runway, why are you waiting for me to call it? You know, you're a private pilot or you're a commercial pilot. Like, use your certificate. Yeah.
We gotta save the boys' backs a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I definitely had a stage check where I was just, she told me in a debrief, all she could hear me say was 300 feet, 300 feet, 300 feet, 300 feet. And definitely not the safest landing. Definitely should have done a go around, but.
And that's the thing we see on stage checks with landings is that, like, you know, you have an aim point and touchdown point. And if you're a commercial pilot, your short field landing unit, you got 100 feet. Right. And that's not even a full stripe. And everyone's like, they see their aim point go past the cowling, and then they see their touchdown point go past the cowling. And then it's just a real quick push down.
Yep.
Boom. Mash the nose wheel down. And they're like, great, I made my point. What's next? What just happened?
Like, if we were on a very short field, you know, maybe we have our license and we're doing that on like a very short field, it's probably not going to be a soft field. It's probably going to be like gravel strip or something. We just go boom, like that's not going to work out well.
And it's fine if like the short field or normal is firm, like that's not unsat if it's a firmer landing. What's not okay is landing on the nose wheel at, you know, just at ridiculously fast speeds,
like 65 knots nose wheel, just like, oh, that's don't enjoy that, you know.
So like realistically, I didn't really learn this until my CFI, but you should not be releasing back pressure at all. I mean, if you're ballooning, obviously you have to release the back pressure, but when you're going in for landing, you should not be releasing back pressure. You should be increasing back pressure the entire way through your roundout and flare to your touchdown point, even if it is a short field landing, right? Like, yep. Your short field landings and normal landings should be very similar. The only difference is that the criteria are smaller.
Yeah.
Is that an incorrect thing to say?
You can see the runway, and that's what scares so many students and even myself learning how to land. Like, what do you mean I can't see the runway? Like, how do I fly?
I always say, if you're not hearing the stall warning horn when you're pulling back, you're probably doing it wrong. Like he should be, there's a little bit more room to touch down, a little bit slower.
So one of the questions I actually had about was, how do you guys know? So let's say I'm going down a touchdown. I got 100 feet to touchdown. So one stripe, basically. Can you tell if I'm like 10 feet past my touchdown, like criteria? Like how like in depth can you actually see the measurements on the runway?
Depends how much we're really focused on what's going on sometimes. I don't know.
I'm glad to hear you guys are doing your jobs effectively.
What did you expect? So I usually look out my peripheral vision out the window, and you can kind of see as we kind of come down the runway, right? If the pappy's being the second stripe, well, then you're coming over the threshold, reducing power. First stripe goes under the nose. You shouldn't see the aim point, and you definitely shouldn't see your touchdown point. And from there, it's easy to judge kind of where you are in relation to what stripe you're flying over. So can we get down to 10 feet? No, you know, you're not going to unset if you're 110 feet off, at least in if you're taking my check, right? Because it's so close. I've had students that like, all right, let's try the landing again after they land, you know, 800 feet long. That one, it's a little easier when it's pretty far down the runway.
Yeah, it's really about like peripherals, and yeah, there's no way we can tell if they're landing properly, touching down at this a slow airspeed. Like we're not going to be able to see the stripe we're landing on right in front of us because the cowling's going to be blocking it. But you can generally like it's normally not like if it's like 50 feet past, 100 feet past, but like 100 feet you can usually tell because every stripe is 120, every space is 80, so you can generally tell if you're passing stripes. So yeah, just go around. If you see a whole stripe in a space pass, that's out of private pilot standards. That's out of any standards for your short field landings.
Or if you start to feel it float, right? If you go to round out and you just kind of level off and start flying down the runway.
And we understand as check pilots, we understand that, yeah, you might come into land and you might get a gust of wind. You might float a little farther, you know? So if you go around and you realize you're floating past your points, it's acceptable to go around, like preferred to go around.
Yeah. And I think too, this is something in Grand Forks that's kind of specific to UND is we all always do our landings in Grand Forks. And so on stage checks, I never want to do them in Grand Forks. I want to go to a satellite where it's quiet. We're the only ones there, hopefully, or maybe there's one other person there, and you know, it's just kind of the applicant doing their thing versus in Grand Forks, you have eight in a pattern, and someone needs a short approach. There's two IFR arrivals coming in, towers overworked. It never goes well. So go to the satellites and get used to landing on a 3,000 by 75, you know, foot wide runway. Because that's probably where you're going to take your check ride. I don't know about other standard pilots and check pilots, but you know, I think using the satellites needs to get used a little bit more by the CFIs during the line training.
Yeah, that is true. Might as well practice where you're going to be for the stage. Is there any other kind of little tips like that that you have for people coming up on stages?
Sounds like no.
I was going to say one thing. One tip I always tell everyone, and it was actually the guy that had my old office. I was about to conduct a stage check and he was saying hi, filling out endorsement or something. And he stepped in and he's like, hey, what stage check are you doing? And my student told him, and then he was like, hey, word of advice. Whatever happens, like if you notice something is wrong, there's a slight chance the stage pilot doesn't notice it. There's also the slight possibility that it really does not matter. Like, say you're doing the run-up and you forget the landing light. Is that unsat? Is that sat? No. But as the student on their stage check, they're like, oh, my goodness, I forgot the landing light. That's terrible. He's going to say something. It's going to be bad. It's like
– it's a debrief item. You know, like, don't do it next time.
A big part of being a pilot is correcting your own mistakes. You know, you're never going to have a perfect flight. You know, I don't think perfect flights exist. There's always something you could always do slightly better. So, and you guys had Jeff Rain on the podcast earlier. He'll be the first one to tell you that, you know, we're not shooting for perfect. We're just always
we're not perfect. We're always shooting for perfection. We're never going to get there, but hopefully we strive for that to improve our abilities, you know?
All right. So like for me personally, I have these two or three songs that I listen to when going out to the airport, just to kind of calm me down before a stage check. So when you guys were doing stage checks, do you have anything that you do as well to kind of reduce the stress or anxiety going into the check ride?
I think for me personally, I would just try to make it as controlled as possible. So like, I know in some of the Dan Millott interview videos that I watched, and it's completely unrelated to stage checks, but still kind of, I thought, applied, like, wake up a little bit earlier than you usually do, give yourself extra time, you know, for a Grand Forks train to block you, or, you know, I guess if you're in the dorms for the dining center to be closed, or whatever sort of unknown delay could happen, sort of account for that by getting up early, you know, lay out your shirt and tie the night before, and have it, eat a good meal in the morning, you know, don't go to Darcy's and, you know, get the Dave special and load up in the morning, and then go fly on a hot, bumpy day, but, allow yourself that leeway to have a little bit of extra time. Don't show up to our office at like, you know, a half hour early, because we're probably still with the student before, but give yourself enough time to be relaxed and not be stressed and rushing.
I would always go to the stage check that, like, I would always go to the location that the stage check is at. Like if I was doing a stage check in Ryan Hall, I would show up a little earlier. There's trains right in front, you know. I'd probably show up about 30 minutes early, honestly, and just sit in an area where I could study, just review a couple things. And then at a certain point, I'd say, all right, study enough. We're just going to go into it. But at least I was there, dressed for the occasion, made sure I was ready. That part of the stress was out of there. I was there. Didn't have to worry about anything like that.
Yeah. Go up to the Wings Cafe, throw your AirPods in. Listen to your favorite song, the Vertical Guidance podcast, whatever calms you down.
Yeah.
and just go in there and do your best. And just know that, like, everyone before you, like, most people have onset checks. Like, it's not the end of the world. Again, unless you're Wyatt.
Except for Wyatt.
Amazing. Again, as your instructor.
You guys are going to make me sound like a huge nerd.
I take partial credit.
Owen is a very good CFI, just on for the record.
Thank you.
I'll nominate you for CFI of the
month. Thank you.
For sure, CFI of the month. You can be the CFI of the month on the Vertical Guidance podcast.
Yeah, we'll there we go. We'll start our own awards. It would be really cool. Well,
not everyone that's on the podcast is a CFI. You know, they might be just like, it could be like pilot of the month. You know, who's the best pilot of the month? You know,
I would probably have to give that to Mr. Dan Millott.
I was personally, but you know,
he's not on yet. Maybe we'll put him on in November. You never know. You know, save a special spot for him.
We'll just stay tuned for that.
So, what's some kind of tips to help a student motivate themselves through the beginning of their training? That's always good tips to have.
So 102 is intentionally hard, and I know they told me that in orientation, because it's not a weed out course, it's a you have to want it course, because you everything you learn is new, right? You have to fly an airplane by yourself, and that takes time and practice, and stay motivated. Don't let an unsat, don't let, you know, a week or two of bad weather kind of get you down and get you away from it. Keep your eyes on the prize of what you want. If it's to graduate college, if it's to be an airline pilot, you know, whatever your goal is, keep your eyes on that prize of what you want, and make it happen. Put your head down and make it happen.
How about you, Trent?
Hey, Trent. hey, Trent.
So stay motivated. Sorry, one of my students just emailed me, or one of my applicants just emailed me.
Clients.
We're still technically with the business. You know, we're talking about aviation, might as well reply. But
so the volunteer hours are duly noted.
I'll be the first one to admit, you know, in 102, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't comprehend what was happening. I didn't know what was going on. Eventually I figured it out. It took me a couple weeks in to figure out like how this is going to work. but I did figure it out. So to stay motivated, you know, you gotta want to be a pilot, you know, you have to continue to, I don't know, just.
It's hard. It's not easy. Like learning how to fly, it doesn't come natural for, I'd probably say probably anybody. So you have to put the initiative, the study time at home. You know, if you think, well, if I go on an hour and a half flight, well, what am I doing? Probably five maneuvers and a couple of landings. Well, do I know all the setups, the MRAs, the recovery, all, you know, all the nuances for all these checks and all these maneuvers? Are you familiar with it? Can you go and perform? Do you have the knowledge going into the flight to make it successful? Because if you don't prepare ahead of time, it's very obvious to your instructor. And you're just going to have to keep doing review flights because your maneuvers and landings won't be within standards for the lesson.
When you're starting out with your private pilot license at UND, you know, you want to start off, like, there's so much information to absorb. It's a little easier when you're like a commercial student and you're thinking about like, hey, if I don't know this information, like I have the knowledge of where to look up that information, how to find it. As a private pilot, it's really, or a private pilot student pilot, it's really difficult to find out what the good resources are, you know. In order to stay motivated, you gotta give yourself the drive, you know. At that level, you should be asking your flight instructor lots of questions. Any flight instructor I know, they're not gonna be like, that's a dumb question. They might say, hey, we covered that last flight, but they'll kind of force you to think through the problem yourself, you know. That's what I always try to do as an instructor, and I'll just try to make them think their way through the problem themselves, because that's what being a pilot is, you know. We're very adaptable. We got to be flexible with the scenarios, so just stay motivated.
One of my students comes with like questions every flight. He has like four or five written down in his notebook, and that's how we start. And he's always like, yeah, sorry for, you know, all the questions and bugging and whatnot. It's like, no, like that's why I'm here. You know, that's a service that we provide through UND for the students, to answer your questions. And I think it challenges us as flight instructors to be the best that we can be.
There's a lot of times when students will come into my office, they'll ask me a question like, well, I don't really know that answer, but we're going to find it. We're going to figure it out. We're going to find the answer before you leave. And we'll spend a couple minutes like researching and figuring out the best answer. We might read some threads on the internet that are not accurate. You know, you can't verify that information, but those threads will lead us to the correct documents where we can verify the information. So.
All right. So we're kind of wrapping things up a little bit. I would like to say thank you guys for coming on, but is there any last tips that you would have for someone about to take their check ride or taking their check ride?
Work hard, study hard, be yourself, and don't stress too much about it.
And you can always go around.
And you can always go around.
Thanks for being on today, boys.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast.
If you have any questions for us, DM us on Instagram @vertical_guidance.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.